have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets are screaming now. Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. All right, today we're going to shift our focus from the economy and talk about politics. We have a special show today. I have a special guest, a Paco Fabian, that I'm going to introduce very shortly. Paco is the Campaigns and Communications Director at the Our Revolution Group. He's going to tell us a little bit more about that. The Our Revolution Group is a progressive organization and movement that has been central to mobilizing youth and others to turn out in support of the Bernie Sanders campaign. A very significant organization, not fly by night, not something that just came along. This is the real thing. And we want to talk with Paco about the experience supporting Sanders in his campaign, especially now that Sanders has dropped out abruptly and endorsed Biden. We want to know what the progressives movement is really going to do here in the remainder of the year up to the election, and of course, speculate a little bit about the election itself and after the election. What might it do? Paco is spent a decade working in the labor movement, and he also worked for immigrant and farm worker rights, consumer rights, and international issues focused on Latin America. Paco and I have a little bit of a familiar background, although I'm sure I'm much older than he is. I worked 15 years in the labor movement myself as an organizer and a local union president and strike coordinator and so forth. So I know where Paco's coming from. We want to talk with him because he's been on the front line. You know, he's been there mobilizing especially ethnic youth and the whole youth movement behind Bernie Sanders, which was significant here, significant development. The millennials and the Gen Zers, these are the folks who are really getting ripped up by the policies of the last couple decades. And you know my position that the Democrat policies have not been all that different. We'll see whether they are now, but, under Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, not that all that different than the Republicans. Just a question of emphasis, as I've described in my just published book, The Scourge of Neoliberalism, U.S. Policy from Reagan to Trump. You can check that out on my blog and website, jackrasmus.com. Okay, that's my introduction of Paco. I'd like to jump right into this, and we're going to discuss these questions, the progressive movement, the Sanders campaign, where do we go from here, for the entire show today. This is going to be our focus. So, Paco, are you with me? Whoop, Paco. Whoa. I don't hear Paco.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Are you there, Paco?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you for having me on the show. Really excited to be here.
Okay. We got you. And we're ready to go here. Paco, to begin with, why don't you tell us and our audience something about the Our Revolution Group, its origins, and its relationship to the Sanders campaign. And then we'll get into more substantive questions.
Absolutely. So Our Revolution was founded after Senator Sanders' first run for the presidency in 2016. We've grown pretty quickly since then. We have groups all over the country ranging from, county-based and city-based groups of folks that are aligned with us all the way up to sort of state-based overall groups. And our mission is really threefold. It's of course course, involves organizing folks to fight on three different fronts, right? One is electing progressive champions to office. That goes, you know, from dog catcher all the way to president. To win on issue fights, fighting on issues like Medicare for All, Green New Deal, you know, a more progressive immigration system in this country. And then the final sort of part of our triangle, as we like to call it, is transforming the Democratic Party and making it a more progressive party. In 2016, we were able to change, for example, the rules that prevented superdelegates from participating on the first ballot. You know, we were able to make the Democratic platform a little more progressive. And so that's what we do. We have, you know, roughly 600 groups all over the country that are engaged in this, and, you know, millions of folks that are with us fighting on this range of issues.
Well, good. That's a pretty good introduction of who you are and what you've been doing here. You know, where's the progressive movement going to go from here? Look, Sanders just dropped out, surprisingly, because he had been talking, he was going all the way to the convention. And he just as quickly endorsed Joe Biden. And of course, you know, Biden is the old wing of the Democratic Party, the moneybag wing. That's pretty much, you know, the old Democratic Leadership Conference, DLC, that kind of took over the party with Bill Clinton and has been running it ever since and putting up the candidates and making the decisions in the party to the consternation of the progressive wing of the party, of course. But, you know, they seem to be firmly embraced, you know, within the Democratic Party, and Joe Biden's clearly their candidate. He has been from the very beginning, and Bernie drops out real quick and endorses Biden. I mean, even Elizabeth Warren's holding her her ammunition to the convention here. What do you make of all that? I mean, what's OR, or, you know, if you can't speak for OR, what's your view of why Bernie dropped out so quickly, didn't go all the way to the convention and endorse Biden so quickly as well?
Well, look, I mean, I can't speak for the senator, of course, right? I have, you know, no idea why this happened as quickly as it did, but I could imagine, you know, the threat of Donald Trump being a big reason for that to happen, and this perception that, you know, Democrats need to unify as quickly as possible to be in the best position possible to beat him in November. But look, I mean, where the progressive movement's going to go in this moment is still sort of unclear, right? The one thing that I think is worth noting is that for decades, you know, Senator Sanders was sort of the lone voice of sort of the Democratic Socialist left in Congress, certainly, and one of very few voices in the country. But that's no longer the case, right? There's many more sort of high-profile folks now that hold the same positions that he does, folks like, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York, Rashida Tlaib in Michigan. And so there's other folks out there that are, you know, ready to pick up the banner and run with it. I think for our revolution's part of this, I think, you know, there's two things that we're certainly going to continue doing in this moment to continue growing the progressive movement. The first, I think, is continuing to support progressive candidates for office, whether it's, like I mentioned earlier, right, dog catcher all the way to U.S. Senator. There's unfortunately no longer a candidate for the White House in that sort of progressive lane. But, you know, we have folks like Betsy Sweet in Maine that's running against Susan Collins, somebody that you guys should keep an eye out on. You know, we were able to get Marie Newman to win her primary against Dan Lipinski in the Chicago area. Dan Lipinski, known to be sort of the most conservative Democrat in Congress, you know, against a woman's right to choose, you know, holds very anti-immigrant policy positions. And so we were able to defeat him and bring in someone that's much more progressive and is likely to win in a very Democratic district, the general election in November. Folks like Mike Siegel in Texas, who's running for Congress as well. These are folks that, you know, we think can help us build towards the progressive vision of the country that we hold. So that's one plank. And then I think the second one is, I mentioned earlier, you know, part of our mission here is to transform the Democratic Party. I mean, I think our revolution is going to continue to encourage folks to vote for Bernie Sanders, even though he's no longer, he suspended his campaign, but he's still on the ballot in many places. And the reason is we need to continue pushing the Democratic Party to be better. And we need to have at least 25% of the delegates at the DNC, at the Democratic National Convention, in order to be able to shape things like the rules for the next convention, the rules for the next primary, and you know, be able to shape the platform of the party going forward. And this is important because, as I mentioned earlier, our revolution and sort of the Bernie delegates at the 2016 convention were able to shape the rules of the party, right? Making sure that superdelegates, which are sort of elected Democratic officials that become delegates just simply because of their position in the party, weren't allowed to vote in the first ballot, right? Are not going to be able to vote on the first ballot this time around. It doesn't really matter anymore because we have, you know, Biden as the nominee at this point. But it could have made a difference, for example, in 2015 and 2016 when superdelegates, as soon as Hillary Clinton announced that she was going to run for president, starting amassing support by these superdelegates, basically, you know, skewing the playing field in her favor before any single vote had been cast. And so those rules, unfortunately, the wins that we were able to get in 2016 only applied to this Democratic National Convention. And so we need to amass enough delegates to be able to make those changes permanent going forward. And so those two things, you know, fighting to elect progressive candidates at all levels of government and then continuing to push folks to vote for Bernie Sanders so we can get enough delegates to shape the Democratic Party's policies and rules are things that we're going to continue immediately.
Well, you know, some folks say that it looks like the Democrat establishment didn't even need that to rely on second ballot. As you said, you know, the special delegates are mostly party operatives. And, right. You know, it's like 500 or so, I think, out of, you know, what did they, 1992 to win the nomination. So, you know, they would have been determinative on behalf of whomever was the party establishment's candidate. But as you note, it's not necessary now. It appears that the Democratic Party was able to outflank Bernie here in the South. Why did you know, Bernie not turn out the youth in the South? What's your explanation of that? I know OR has been really playing a key role in mobilizing the youth turnout, and there is a major youth turnout here in support of Sanders across the country, and you know, that's maybe the most positive development of the Sanders campaign and OR's work. But what happened in the South? You know, in Georgia and those other primaries there, the youth simply didn't turn out. Or is there youth in the Democratic Party to vote in the primaries in the South? You know, it appears that most of the composition of the party voters there are kind of middle-aged and older. And I don't know, what's your analysis of what happened in the South and why Biden all of a sudden just swept the South and pushed Bernie aside?
Yeah, so I mean, this is my analysis, my personal analysis of this, and I think, you know, black voters, in particular black women, played an incredible role and play an incredible role for the Democratic Party in the South and the areas you've mentioned. And unfortunately, I think, you know, the message that Senator Sanders was delivering during his campaign just didn't resonate with them. I think, and again, this is my personal analysis, I think, you know, folks wanted to return to some sense of normalcy, and they thought that Joe Biden was the right vehicle for that, and not Bernie Sanders. Maybe Bernie Sanders was a little too radical, a little too far, right? But keep in mind that this all happened while at the same time issues like Medicare for All, paid sick leave, you know, canceling student debt continued to be very popular even in the South, right? In Mississippi, I think I saw exit polls showing support for something like Medicare for All at, like, you know, almost 80%, which is, you know, really big and kind of inconsistent with the results of the primary there. And so I think it comes down to the perception of electability, right? Whether or not somebody like Bernie Sanders could be elected as the next president versus someone like Joe Biden. And I think Joe Biden won that argument in the South. But the issues that we were campaigning on, Medicare for All, canceling student debt, you know, those issues continue to be popular. And so I think the Democratic Party and the Democratic nominee now, who's, you know, almost 100% likely to be Joe Biden, need to understand that those issues and the fact that, you know, at least 30% of the Democratic Party did vote for Bernie Sanders and will continue to do so probably, mean that they're going to have to move in that direction, especially if they want to be in the strongest position possible to defeat Donald Trump in November.
Well, you know, on that question, you know, Biden does not still embrace Medicare for All, even though 80%, as you say, overwhelmingly want Medicare for All. It's kind of a washed down public option thing, and then a token thing on college education. So it seems Biden is making some overture to Sanders supporters, but will it be enough, you know, to get the, you know, the youth movement, the Sanders supporters, the people that are behind, you know, your group, OR, will it be enough for them to vote for Biden? I mean, is the Trump scare appeal enough to get those folks to trust the Democratic Party establishment again when, you know, in 2008, so many promises were made and not delivered, and in 2012, the same thing? What's your sense of your supporters' response to the token moves by Biden and the Democrat establishment?
Well, look, on the issue of Medicare for All, right, I think it's certainly not enough. I think, you know, in order to win the support of folks that really, really see Medicare for All as a sort of litmus test for who they would support as a candidate, and there's a lot of them, you know, the moves that the Biden campaign has made so far are certainly not enough. And I think added to that, you know, the current health situation that we're living through in this country kind of proves that Medicare for All is something that is needed. And, you know, anything less than that will just not simply be a Band-Aid on a problem that's huge. I read an article this morning from a former healthcare insurance industry executive who is basically admitting, you know what, the healthcare insurance industry is not going to be able to get us out of this problem, right? And if we really are going to try to, you know, cover everybody and make sure that we, you know, we're able to get past this pandemic, then folks have to be comfortable that if they're sick, they can go and get tested and not expect a $10,000 bill for just trying to figure out if they have COVID-19 or not, right? And so I think this moment, I think, also proves the need for the party to respond in a more effective manner than they have been. And something like, you know, an expanded public option or anything less than Medicare for All is not going to be enough. And then on the youth side of things, right, student debt is a huge burden for many young people to hold. They've been told through their whole lives that, you know, if you want to make something out of yourself, you have to, you know, get an education, go to college. And many, many have to accrue a ridiculous amount of debt in order to do that. And, you know, we're finding out that as the country has been locked down to try and prevent the spread of this virus, many folks are unemployed and aren't able to pay back their debt. Again, something that is sorely needed to try and address the reality that folks are living through now. So I think both of those things, as you mentioned, are going to be issues that the Biden campaign is going to have to move on. I think the reality we're living in proves the need for them, and it's up to them to show some leadership, some guts, and provide real solutions, not just band-aids, to the issues that folks are going to have to deal with even after this pandemic is over.
Yeah, I think a risk is that the Democrat leadership will decide that the whole issue is Trump, and they'll go very conservatively and cautiously on proposing progressive policies and solutions, even though, as you say, you know, the only solution to the medical side of this pandemic, it would be Medicare for all. I mean, look at the mess that they're trying to do to administer support for hospitals and clinics and people who need it and leave and so forth. It's a hodgepodge. It's a Byzantine administrative car wreck. All they would have to do is just fund Medicare for all and get people to sign up on one page and then just cover all the bills. You know, it wouldn't be an administrative fiasco that it's turning out to be now. So, you know, absolutely agree with you. Medicare for all is the only solution. And as far as the students are concerned, you know, it's always irked me. I have kids and students who are up to their elbows in student debt. And it's always irked me. Why does the government charge them 6.7% interest when even the private sector, you know, if you consolidate your loans, you'll pay about 4%. You know, why is the government charging the kids more than even the bankers? No,
right.
There's no reason why they couldn't just eliminate that government debt. It would not affect the economy negatively at all, because you're not dealing with exempting a private sector debt and the contagion effect between who the debt holders are and so forth. It's just government debt. You could just wipe that out overnight, and it probably would stimulate consumption. You know, so why aren't Biden and the Democrat leadership being bold about this thing, which of course gets back to the point I just made, and I don't think they're bold about it because they think their number one issue is Trump, and they don't have to propose something, just Trump or nothing at all, and that's going to be a big mistake, I think. Because, as you know, Paco, it's not about popular vote. It's about, half a dozen or so swing states in our archaic electoral college government here that we have. And, I don't know that something bold it will be forthcoming from the Democratic Party leadership now that they're back firmly in the driver's seat. At least, Sanders was pushing them in a direction of popular support, but now that he's not, I'm not all that optimistic that they'll understand that what they've got to do is offer something that really appeals to people, not just criticize Trump. Everyone knows Trump and what he is, what are you for, Democratic Party? And if you propose a watered down public option and a little token here on student debt and a little improvement here, on housing or whatever, I'm not so sure that that's going to be enough. Anyway, we can have our opinions on that, and I do as well as you.
I would just add to what you were saying, right?
Go ahead.
And the bigger sort of picture here, right? It's people are not going to be as excited to vote against something or someone, in this case Trump, than they would be to vote for somebody or something, right? I think the motivation there for voters to vote for something that they believe in versus for against something they don't believe in is very different. And, you know, in order to really get the Democratic side of the election excited, you know, you have to do something more than just Joe Biden. I think we saw, even though he's won in several places, a lot of the excitement around the primary campaign was not coming from the Joe Biden side of things, right? For a little bit, it was coming from the Pete Buttigieg side. It was coming from the Sanders side when he won in Iowa, when he won in New Hampshire, when he won in Nevada. It was coming for a while from the Elizabeth Warren side before the primaries were started. But it never really came from the Joe Biden side, even after he started winning. And so I think that's a big concern for Democrats. They have to figure out ways to get people excited about his campaign, not just excited about voting against somebody, but excited to vote for something. And that's going to be a real struggle if they don't see that the issues that folks get excited about are Medicare for all, are, you know, canceling student debt. You know, the Green New Deal is something else that I think we'll be campaigning on going forward that Joe Biden isn't quite great on yet, but could be. And so those are things that the Democrats really need to take a hard look at and figure out whether or not they're willing to move their positions in order to be in the strongest position possible to defeat Trump. And, you know, so far it's not been good enough.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you there. And, you know, talking about being creative about solutions that excite people, you know, this pandemic thing is taking a toll on the economy, and it's not going to snap back. I've been writing about this. You know, we're not having a V-shaped recovery. The economy is going to be wounded for years here. And a lot of the jobs that have been lost here and more coming, the forecast is 40 million by the end of May will have lost their jobs. A lot of those jobs aren't coming back. What's the answer for employment for those folks? That's both parties, both candidates are going to have to address that before the November election because it's going to be a very weak recovery. A lot of folks are going to be left behind. So, you know, what's your program for employment of all those that are left behind? A lot of companies, small businesses are going to fail and they're not going to come back. And those that do come back are going to come back with a far less of a workforce. They're going to cut costs and figure out how to do that. And when they reopen, they're going to continue that cost cutting. And they're going to work with fewer in their labor force, you know, in the company. There's going to be very little investment, new investment. Companies are going to hoard their cash. They're going to sit on it. The same with consumers. They're going to hoard, you know, their assets and sit on those and just spend what has to be spent. And the nature of the economy is not all of it's going to open up. So, you know, anticipating what this economy is going to look like in September, October is going to be very important, and particularly with regard to jobs. So what's going to be the progressive movement's answer to this? What will be the Democratic leadership's answer to this, the Biden wing? You know, what will be Trump's answer to this? I think a lot will turn upon the question of the jobs and the lack of the recovery here in the second half of this year. Even more important than you know, student debt and all those Green New Deal, all those things that are very important. But, you know, we're not even seeing exciting ideas coming out of Joe here at this stage. What can we expect later? That's a key question. And, you know, what will the progressives propose here in terms of employment in the wake of this situation?
Look, I think, you know, this is something that I've personally been campaigning on for several years, and some of the folks I work with at Our Revolution have been doing longer. And that is, you know, the role of the federal government in the economy, right? So the federal government plays a huge role in the private sector, even though a lot of people don't think about it this way. But the federal government buys everything from apples to airplanes from the private sector, right? Apples and it's the federal government is like the biggest purchaser of fruits and vegetables in the economy, you know, for school programs, for the military, et cetera. And so we have to figure out a way that we can attach some strings to the way the federal government spends that money in the private sector. Currently, you know, there are no strings, right? The federal government doesn't attach any sort of standards to the services that it gets. Think about, you know, the U.S. Senate cafeteria, right? There's the lowest bidder gets the contract for food services at the U.S. Senate. But the Senate has the ability to attach strings to things like wages, you know, whether or not these workers are allowed to form a union, you know, whether or not they get paid sick days. Those requirements could be built into, you know, any contract that the federal government establishes in the private sector. And that's one way that we could use the huge footprint that the federal government has in the economy to improve job standards, to improve, you know, the quality of work, to improve wages, benefits, et cetera, that the federal government currently doesn't do, right? And it's been done before, right? During World War II, the federal government, because we were in a war, decided to, you know, say to the private sector, if you want to do a business with the federal government, you know, we need you to respect the rights of your workers to unionize. The reason there was, the federal government couldn't afford to have strikes on, you know, core industries that it relied on to be able to fight an effective war. Well, the same sort of principle could be applied now that we're going to find ourselves in a terrible economic situation coming out of this, you know, health pandemic. And the federal government could require its contracts with the private sector to improve wages, working conditions, and other things, right? That's one. And I think the second one is, you know, we're seeing healthcare workers right now struggling to get, you know, personal protective equipment in order to be able to feel safe providing relief to folks that they're treating that are suffering from this COVID-19 virus. You know, unionizing workplaces can have a huge effect on that as well, making sure that workers have, you know, a right to sit at the table and bargain for things like wages and benefits and other things, make sure that they have all the equipment that they need in order to provide, do the job that they're being called to do, whether it's in healthcare or manufacturing, or as we're seeing now also in logistics and distribution with Amazon workers, you know, going on strike, many of them, you know, having to work, even though they're sick, because if they don't work, then they lose a paycheck, and losing a paycheck may mean losing their home, losing their car, and not being able to put food on the table. And so we need to do a real reckoning in this country on both the role that the federal government plays in the private sector and, you know, making sure workers have the rights that they deserve in order to address some of these issues.
Yeah, I mean, during World War II, it was simply a card check. In other words, you just signed a card, and the government checks to see if a majority of the workers in the company signed the card, and that was it. Sit down and negotiate with the union, and the union, you know, will help administer and protect the workers in the process. The biggest growth in the union movement in the U.S. occurred during World War II, not in the 1930s. And, of course, that was an issue, card check, as you probably remember, when Obama was running for office in 2008, and he had promised labor, you know, a card check. We'll introduce that legislation, and as soon as he got elected, he put it in the bottom drawer, and we never heard it again. You know, as important as that is, I don't know. I don't have that much optimism that Joe Biden would even consider that at this particular point. It's important for progressives, I guess, what we're talking about, to try to think of, as you are right now, within the box and out of the box in relationship to this crisis. You know, the issues that were on the table here before the crisis, you know, whether Medicare for All, Green New Deal, and whatever, have to be adapted, I think, to the realities of what we're experiencing now and will continue to experience. And I'm sure, you know, your people in OR are thinking about that as well. For, you know, what does the progressive movement do in relationship to this particular crisis? What's going to be the focus of your group here up to the Democrat party election? Is it really about continue voting for Sanders in the primaries when he's dropped out? Is it, you know, let's go into the convention with some delegates and see if we can tweak the party rules a little bit more? What's the primary objectives between now and the party convention? And will OR endorse and support Joe Biden after the election if he's the candidate?
Look, so yes, you know, Bernie Sanders is still on the ballot in the remaining 20 or so primaries across the country. And so, yes, our focus is going to be to turn out our folks and make sure they still vote for Bernie Sanders because of the delegate count, right? We want to be able to have at least 25% of the delegates in order to be able to file what are called minority reports within the different committees and on the floor of the Democratic National Convention in order to shape both, you know, the platform or the issues that the Democratic Party is going to commit to campaign on in 2020 and beyond, or starting in 2021, I should say. You know, to be able to shape the rules by which the next a candidate will be selected, right? So I think those two are very important. Again, given what we saw in 2016 with the superdelegates sort of, you know, pledging their support before a vote was even cast in favor of one candidate or another, in order to make the party more democratic, right? You know, I think we are more than likely to go in there trying to push, given the pandemic, Medicare for All to be part of the platform of the Democratic Party. Will we get to that? No. But it's a fight we have to have. I don't think there's denying it. I think, again, you know, the support for Medicare for All that we've seen coming out of the primaries and all the different states that have already voted is significant and something that the party should pay attention to. And sure, let's have a robust discussion about it, whether or not you know, the party thinks it's the right thing to do or not. And, you know, we want to be able to have the folks within the party to have that discussion. So that's one. And I think, you know, the second is, you know, supporting candidates up and down the ballot that are progressive, that hold the same policy positions that we do. Because the truth is, you know, as disappointed as we are that Bernie Sanders is no longer campaigning, his name's still on the ballot. But it was never just about Bernie, right? His whole campaign slogan was not me, us. And the truth is even if Bernie were to make it to the White House, even if he made it to the White House in a hypothetical sense, he would need more folks in Congress and governorships and state legislatures and city councils to help him make the progressive platform that we all believe in real. And so, you know, as we're looking for sort of the next progressive wave of folks to come in, we need to support those candidates up and down the ballot to make change. I mean, we've done, for example, last year in 2019, our groups in San Francisco, the San Francisco Bernie Crat Coalition, and others helped elect Chesa Boudin as the next DA of San Francisco, district attorney of San Francisco. And look, I mean, you might think of it as a small, elected position, but it's had a significant impact on people's lives already, right? One of the first things Chesa Boudin did was eliminate cash bail, which, as we know, is in many ways prevents people that don't have money from, getting out of going to jail, right? If you have money, great. If you don't, well, that's kind of as your intro said of the show, the 99%, right? Well, a lot of people don't have that extra cash to be able to post bail, and as a result, end up in jail. So that's a significant change that he's made already that's going to make an immediate impact on people's lives. Local elected officials have that ability in many ways to affect people's lives directly, more so than elected officials at the federal level do, right? I mean, it takes forever to how long did it take us to get to the Affordable Care Act? No, it wasn't perfect, but it did, improve some folks' lives. But that took 2 years to get to Congress and even longer to get implemented, right? And so, local elected officials can have an immediate impact on people's lives, and we'll continue supporting folks like Chesa Boudin, other DAs across the country, as well as city councilors and others. We were able to elect a slate of folks to the Nashville Metropolitan Council, which is basically the city council, the Nashville Metro Council, including Zulfat Suara, who is the first immigrant Muslim woman to be elected to office in Nashville, certainly, and I would argue probably across the whole state of Tennessee. And so there are pockets where we can make immediate change, and we'll continue to look for those pockets, right, and continue to elect progressive candidates that can help us, enact the vision of the country that we think is the right vision, which includes Medicare for All, a Green New Deal, a progressive immigration system in this country, and a host of others that that can really make a difference in people's lives.
So if I were to summarize what you say in terms of your strategy and activity, it's get to the convention, get as many delegates as you can, support Sanders still in the campaigns that still exist, the primaries, even though some of them may not happen at all. And certainly it's hard to get someone to vote for someone who's dropped out of the race, which is a big question mark I had. Why did he drop out so quickly? Even Elizabeth Warren's holding out. But I understand.
Elizabeth Warren did endorse Joe Biden, I think, the day after Bernie Sanders did. Maybe she didn't get enough press around it, but she did. So I think everybody's on the Biden train at this point, right?
Okay. I stand corrected on that one. I thought she was still holding out. It's interesting and really admirable that you guys are pushing at the local level, because you get a movement builds from the bottom up, as you know. It doesn't go from the top down, and that seems to be the most important thing that your organization is doing here. And certainly people should support OR. Where can people go to find out more about our revolution group and maybe participate or whatever? Give us some contact information here.
Absolutely. So, the best place to go is to ourrevolution.com. That's our revolution, double R in the middle, .com. What we encourage folks to do is to get involved with their local groups, right? If you're in Washington State, you can hook up with Our Revolution, Washington Bernie-Crat Coalition. If you're in Nashville, Tennessee, you can hook up with Our Revolution, Nashville and Middle Tennessee. We encourage folks to hook up with their local groups. Again, as you mentioned, right, this all comes from the bottom up, not from the top down. And so if you go to our website, you can find the local group near you and find their contact information, get connected to them, start attending their meetings. We do host sort of national monthly meetings with our all our membership, and we talk about the issues just like we're talking here. We'll have special guests. Last month we had Congressman Ro Khanna from the Silicon Valley area, one of the progressive champions that's in the U.S. House of Representatives now. He came on and talked a little bit about what's going on with COVID and some of the response that's come from Congress. We have local elected officials come, some candidates come and speak about why they're running. And so I encourage folks to get connected with their local groups. We have them, like I said, 600 all over the country. There's probably one very close to you. If there isn't one next to you, near you, let us know, and we're happy to help you start your own group so that there's folks in your area that are fighting on these issues. We've spent right when I came on board at our revolution, which was back in April of 2019, the first thing we did was a Medicare for All ambulance tour, emergency ambulance tour. And we went in several places around the country with this ambulance that was calling for Medicare for All, and started to meet a lot of the Our Revolution activists all over the country. We also started to do an Organized to Win 2020 tour at the beginning of this year. And we've done about 30 of those events all over the country. The last few have obviously had to been, unfortunately, became virtual events because we couldn't gather anymore. So we did them online. What I'm really encouraged about is the amount of folks out there that are willing to stand up and start fighting. The folks that have been inspired by Bernie Sanders' first run to run for something, whether it's, drainage commissioner in Texas, which is a candidate that we endorsed recently, all the way to Congress or Senate. Folks are really itching to get involved. They understand that the only way that we're going to be able to change this is if we get more people elected to positions, elected positions all over the country that hold our values. Folks need to get involved. Find your local groups. If there isn't one in your area, we're happy to help you start one. You can find all that information at ourrevolution.com.
What do you say to disaffected youth who are cynical about either of the political parties, who don't see either of them really addressing their needs, including the Democratic Party? How do you get them activated and behind your movement when they look and they say, oh, well, Bernie Sanders, oh, he's just another Democrat? How do you build the youth movement and your movement addressing those? Because that's the group that you really need to pay attention to at this point. You've mobilized most and probably most of those who are already politically active, but as you've indicated, and as Bernie has indicated, you got to turn out those who were disaffected and, up to now see no reason to vote for either group. How do you appeal to them?
Well, look, I think, I've heard a lot of conversations as we've talked to folks after Bernie dropped out, right? We shouldn't be involved with the Democratic Party anymore. We should start our own party. Look, I think what folks that are disaffected with both parties need to do is get involved in groups like Our Revolution, right? Work to elect folks that really reflect your set of values. It's going to be nearly impossible in our current political system to start a new political party, right? It's very, very difficult to do. I think our best shot is to turn the Democratic Party into a more progressive party. So I would get folks involved in their local Democratic Party, whether it's at the, city level, county level, state level, slowly turn it into a reflection of the values that you hold. If you don't vote, then you can't complain, right? If you're not involved in the process, you're never going to be able to make the party or the process reflect the values that you hold. And so, I'd encourage folks to get involved. I spent some time with a lot of college students from the, I'm based in Washington, D.C., so from the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area, you know, organizing to participate in a Bernie Sanders rally that happened in Virginia. And, you know, I was really encouraged at the amount of folks that came out, all of them college students, and also on how self-organized they were. Right, they were talking to each other, even though students were on different campuses in the area. They were coordinating activities together, and that was really encouraging to see. And I want to see more of that. Right, folks should get involved with their Our Revolution college campus groups if they're on campus. Although I know a lot of people aren't on campus right now, those students are still around. You know, we do have a student organizing committee at Our Revolution that's in touch with a lot of folks and getting them. You know, the information they need to get involved and participate in the process. But that's the most important thing, is they have to get involved. They have to participate. Because if they don't, then they'll never be able to shape, you know, the party or the organizations they're involved in into the to reflect the values that they hold. And look, I mean, I think we've seen a lot of youth movements over the last few years that have been effective in moving the ball forward on their issues. I can think of, you know, the Dreamers on immigration reform and United We Dream and the risks that those folks took in order to win things like DACA and DAPA, which I know are sort of now up in the air given the Trump administration's positions on those issues. But, I mean, these were kids whose motto was undocumented and unafraid, right? They were really risking their life as they knew it in order to advocate for other kids. We're seeing kids from the Sun and young people from the Sunrise Movement really step up and speak out on environmental issues in a way that we haven't seen probably in a generation. And that's really encouraging as well. Young people are the future of the Democratic Party. I think you know, that's one of the Achilles heels of Joe Biden going into this, how he's going to appeal to young people. And he's got to figure out a way to do that. And we saw the Bernie campaign really appeal to those folks. So that's another reason why I think the Biden campaign needs to move in a more progressive direction on issues like the environment, college debt, as we've mentioned already, and others. But folks need to get involved. They need to participate, because if they don't, then they're never going to see the change they want to see.
Well, you know, talk to, you know, some of them say to me, look, you know, Obama in 2008 put together this coalition with a lot of youth and a lot of folks, and there was so much hope, and not much came of that. And then the Democratic Party put up a very weak, questionable candidate in Hillary Clinton, who campaigned terribly, and now they're putting up Joe Biden, who doesn't excite anybody. You know, if Biden doesn't win again, you know, what do you think will be the level of cynicism here, particularly of young folks, to reform the Democratic Party?
Well, I mean, I think it'll hopefully, you know, make it urgent, right? And I hope that's not the case. I think Donald Trump is a very dangerous candidate, and 4 more years of Donald Trump would be a disaster for our country. We're seeing a pretty weak response to a healthcare situation that's affecting everybody from the federal government. I think the governors in our country are stepping up in a way that is commendable, but you know, the federal government's sort of missing in action right now, or not doing what it should be doing, and focused on other things like trying to reopen the government. But look, I think, you know, yeah, it certainly could be discouraging, but look, I mean, again, me personally, right, I was very disappointed that Bernie dropped out. I mourned for about a day, but then I started organizing again, right, because that's what we need to do in order to see the change we want to see. And, yeah, I mean, folks will be discouraged. There will be a lot of cynicism. But it's really up to organizers like me and like you, Jack, to explain to them, you know, why, you know, sitting out is not an option, right? You know, we need in this moment to get more people to buy into our vision of this country, and not less. In my view, it's you know, more necessary than ever now, right? Even if when we get past this health care crisis that we're going through, or this health crisis that we're going through, you know, 5-10 years from now, we might go through another one, right? Climate change is opening up the possibility for other viruses to sort of propagate in a way that they haven't before. And so, you know, it'd be on us to push for Medicare for All, so that when something like this happens again, we know we'll be more ready than we are now, right? And so, yeah, I mean, folks are going to be disappointed, and they certainly need space to go through this process of mourning. But, you know, we can't stop organizing. If we do, then we will definitely lose.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. I think the issues are there. You know, it's not a question of the issues and people aware of what needs to be done. The only question of import, I believe, is the organization question. You know, how do you mobilize people and deliver on the issues? You don't have to convince them. You know, it's like if I'm calling on my own experience, if I had to go into a company, a factory or something, and convince people about the issue to join the union, well, you know, that's an uphill climb. But if people knew and are in agreement on the issues, then it's just a question of giving them an organizational means for delivering on what they already agree on needs to be done. You can't talk people into what needs to be done. And we don't need to talk people today. They know what needs to be done. The problem is, do they have the confidence in the organization that's before them in order to say, okay, let's go in that direction to get things done? And, you know, frankly, I'm not all that confident, as you are, that you can reform the Democratic Party and get it to do what needs to be done. I mean, the party reformed in the 30s. It got what needed to be done. But I'm not so sure I see the reform coming here, notwithstanding, you know, some what I think are minor adjustments to delegate rules in the convention and so forth. And I'm not such a big advocate of platforms because, you know, that's kind of a marketing tool for politicians, and they go and they do what the hell they want when they're elected anyway. But I understand why you're doing that and why, you know, you're pushing for that, to push the ideas, you know, the ideas forward. And the question is, how do you mobilize the youth further to the next stage? But okay, we're getting a signal here. We're about through. Paco, gee, I hope we can come back and talk about this around the time of the convention. Thank you for coming on and giving us the information about our revolution. And folks, follow up, join, or do something.